You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee, right here on LA Talk Radio.
All right, I thought there's going to be another introduction. Usually they do two songs, don't they, Alan Lee?
Yeah. Maybe they are wanting to give us more time with our guests, and so they cut out a part of the music.
Or maybe I just hit the wrong button.
Maybe you just hit the wrong button. That's more like it.
That sounds like something I would totally do. But, man, we got a great show tonight.
Oh, I'm excited.
It's nice because we have another in-guest studio. This is like 3 weeks in a row where the guests have come into the studio, which is awesome. Our guest, he's been in movies like Forrest Gump and Crybaby, and he's also an author that has written a book that I have in my hand called James Earl Ray, The Last Days of Inmate 65477. And it was written by our guest, Michael Gabriel. How's awesome. It going, Michael?
Hey, thank you, Michael. So much for having me.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for doing it. Now, Michael, I feel like you and I have a relationship where I could call you Mike.
Absolutely.
We were talking before the show.
All right, so, Michael, I've seen you before on the scene. I don't remember. We were talking about that earlier. It was either Laugh Factory or Flappers, right?
One of the two. The Comedy Store, possibly.
Comedy Store, okay. And you said you started doing comedy, then you stopped and do acting, and now you're doing back to comedy.
I had a liver transplant.
Right.
I was diagnosed with liver cancer. My life was saved when I had a liver transplant. And I said, that's it. If I can survive that, I'm no longer going to let stage fright get to me.
Right, because you were scared of stage fright.
Oh, a paralyzing fear.
Yeah.
I would almost hyperventilate on stage. Cool. It was that bad.
Wow. Jeez. A lot of people have that fear, though. But, it's weird that, because you do acting, that you have that fear.
But acting's more controlled. They give you a set of lines, usually, and you memorize them. You whereas stand-up, it's you.
It's just
Yeah. So, how many books besides this have you written?
That's the first whole completed book. I just wrote a chapter. An FBI agent that was mentioned in my book came forward and said he has physical evidence proving that James Earl Ray did not kill Dr. King.
Right.
He wrote a book, and he asked me if I'd write a chapter for him.
And this, so you ghostwrited a chapter for his book.
Yeah, he just sort of inserted it in.
Wow.
More of my friendship and relationship with James Earl Ray.
So this is Michael's child.
This one is, I was visiting James Earl Ray in prison.
For a year.
I saw him every day the last 6 months of his life. Wow. I mean, every day in a row. And I kept a daily journal to document everything that was going on. And then he mentioned we should really turn this into a book.
Yeah. Wait, James Earl Ray mentioned it?
Yeah.
Wow.
And his feeling was always that one day the classified documents would prove what nobody else had proven, that he was innocent.
Right.
And he just thought any of this information is just another piece of the puzzle.
Well, Alan and I, we read some of the book, but we it was too big. It's like
size of the yellow pages.
It's 400 pages. And
we were a little behind.
But tell us just a short version of James Earl Ray. He obviously has been convicted of killing Martin Luther King, but when he was arrested, he said he didn't do it, and he kept on saying he didn't do it.
It was a plea bargain. His lawyer was working with the government, and they said, we're going to arrest your father, your two brothers, and we're going to give you the death penalty. If you agree to a plea bargain, nobody else in the family will be touched, and they were going to give him a 99-year sentence.
Right.
The lawyer said, once that happens, then you file for an appeal, and then you get the trial that you wanted all along. So that's kind of how, and for 30 years, they denied him that trial.
Wow.
And by law, he was entitled.
Sure.
Right.
This is where the story gets crazy.
Yeah, we want to hear the crazy stuff.
If you file an appeal within a month of your sentence, and if the judge dies or is incapacitated, the motion is automatically pushed through.
Oh,
really?
They found the judge 2 weeks after James Earl Ray was sentenced and filed an appeal. They found the judge dead at his desk, literally slumped over the paperwork for his appeal.
2 weeks.
Wow.
And it's that really sounds like, you know, they took him out. But honestly, we believe he had a heart condition all along.
Okay.
And this is the one thing that didn't involve chicanery.
Okay.
He was entitled to that trial.
So it was just bad luck for the judge then.
Right?
It
was, that was good for that. Well, the judge
great
died.
For James Earl Ray.
Yeah. So that doesn't fit the story of shooting.
But for 30 years, every time his lawyer filed, they just said nope.
Isn't that something? So they denied. Yeah. They denied.
It's a Tennessee statute. Wow. He was entitled to it.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's talk about that for a second. You became. How did the relationship with you and James Earl Ray start? Was it pen pals and then you?
Yes, and this is going to sound terrible, but I, as a comedian, I was pretending to have a school where I taught yoga to cats.
Yes, that's what we were going
to
ask.
And I sent him a letter, and I said, would you like to write a foreword to a book I'm doing on cat yoga? Uh-huh. Thinking he's never going to write me back.
Right.
And it turns out he wrote everybody back.
Really?
And I got a letter from him. So I said, well, I'm going to follow up. I'll write him back.
Okay.
And a second letter came. By the end of the year, I had 50 or 60 letters. We were literally going once a week.
Right.
Then it sort of became phone calls. He would call me collect.
Wow.
And finally I said, could you please put me on your visiting list?
Wow.
I was in Baltimore. He was in Nashville.
Uh-huh.
He needed a liver transplant.
Right.
That's the really strange part of the story.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
That he was stabbed in the prison library maybe 20-something years earlier. And when they gave him a transfusion, they couldn't test blood back then. And he got hepatitis.
Oh, my.
The prison didn't tell him.
Yeah.
20-something years later, they find him collapsed in his cell in a coma.
Wow.
And they said, you're going to die within a year if you don't get a transplant. I come up from Baltimore. For people that don't know, if you have a bad liver, a fatty hamburger is as damaging as a shot of whiskey.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I found the guy who stocked the vending machines.
Yeah.
Tracked him down, and I said, would you stock one machine with all healthy stuff?
Wow.
And the guy agreed to do it.
Right.
And the only problem was inmates can't use the machines. A visitor has to do it. So I literally packed up, rented a small house in Nashville, and every day I would go to the prison. I'd hit the vending machines. I'd go in to see them.
Yeah.
And it just kind of started keeping the daily journal.
So when you started doing this, did you, like, was it in your mind saying, oh, I want to write a book about this guy? Or, like, what?
Not
like,
at all.
He's just organic.
I was convinced he was innocent.
Yeah.
HBO had done a mock trial several years earlier.
Okay.
And that jury also said innocent. There's just no evidence against
this
guy.
The mock jury.
Yeah.
Wow.
But they conducted it like it was an actual trial.
Right.
They gave everyone a certain budget. They conducted it in a courtroom. And they said the same thing. No, he's innocent.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do know one thing about it, assassinations. And, I mean, I'm not going to say if I think he's innocent or not, you know. But the thing is, I do know, especially during this time, a lot of assassinations were kind of like BS'd a little. You know, like the Kennedy ones.
Sirhan.
So, like, it puts a lot of doubt on what actually did happen and what actually did not happen. And I'm sure on this Martin Luther King thing, that was the exact same case. And the fact that you visit him every single day for 6 months, so you're going in thinking he's not guilty, but what part did you decide, hey, I want to write and document this?
When I saw some of the dirty tricks that were playing against him.
Oh, so they were screwing with him in prison.
They wanted him dead.
Right.
They did not want him getting a trial. They did not want him getting a liver transplant. There's a substance called silymarin, milk thistle extract. It's kind of a food additive.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a vitamin.
Right.
It's rumored to be helpful with people with liver problems.
Yes.
So I asked the warden, could I buy a bottle and give it to you guys and he can take it every day. It's very expensive. So they say there's a whole way you do this. You have to have a special pharmacist. It has to be sealed when it comes to us. Long story short, the warden approved it. Said, now, instead of having you go to the prison infirmary every day of the week, we're going to give you a week's worth to keep in your cell.
Mm-hmm.
2 days later, they raid his cell, confiscate the pills, and formally charge him with possession of drugs.
Oh, my God.
And I said to him, "Why? We have written out the writing where they say they approved your having it. Why would they do this?"
Right.
He goes, "Well, they can leak to the media that I've been busted for drugs, and people will say, why should we let him have a liver transplant if he's a junkie?"
Right.
By the time they come out and prove that it's not drugs and it's the pills they said he could have, the damage will have been done.
Right.
The retraction will be buried in the middle of the paper.
Too late. Wow.
So he had me. He stole the paperwork from the warden, gave it to me to smuggle out of the prison.
And you got it.
And I anonymously faxed it back to the warden, and I threatened that if this is leaked, I will leak this.
Nice.
And we will expose you. And the whole thing was quietly dropped.
Nice.
Wow.
And that's when we said, we got to tell the world what... And that's not even the worst one. They literally tried to trick him into signing a false confession.
Oh, yeah, sure of that, yeah.
He would go into the hospital and have 25 pounds of fluid drained from his stomach. When you're dying, you need a liver transplant. Your body makes an ammonia-like fluid, and it has an effect on you. It's like having Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
And literally, he couldn't write, didn't know what day it was.
Oh, dear.
They would take him in the hospital, drain the fluid. The next morning, he would be sharp as a tack, but nothing ever happened.
Yeah.
So they planned to have a guy come in and have him sign a confession
while
he was in that out-of-it stage.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
I called his lawyer, and they waited until the lawyer was in London.
Right.
So I called the lawyer, told him what I thought was about to happen. He filed paperwork that made me a special purpose local agent, giving me the ability to take documents into the prison as if I were a lawyer, and they're not allowed to see them.
Right.
So I brought the documents in, he signed them, and those documents prevented this DA and anybody else from seeing him without the lawyer. So they were never able to get him to sign that confession.
Without the lawyer's presence.
Yeah, that's pretty scary, because I watch a lot of forensic files and stuff, and like they always fake confessions. You know what I mean? I mean, half the time, they end up committing the crime and stuff, like, because at the end of the show, they tell you, but...
And the whole routine they use, I don't know if you remember with Kennedy, but Oswald, they sent him to a movie. He was caught in a movie theater.
Right, right.
All of a sudden, 20 cops come in, like the whole state of Texas. They know that, that's the guy, and he's at that theater.
Right. I actually don't think Oswald killed Kennedy.
I don't either.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was definitely the government. I do think Oswald did kill the police officer. What was his name?
Tippit.
You know Tippit.
Yeah, yeah. He definitely killed that dude. But, it was because he was scared or whatever. Sure. I mean, so Oswald was no saint.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I do think, I don't think he killed the president.
And then the same thing with Sirhan. We know that he fired shots at Robert Kennedy.
Right,
at the hotel. Greer, the football player who jumped on him, and a room full of people said he was never more than 5 or 6 feet close to him.
Right.
And he's standing in front. The coroner said the bullet that killed Robert Kennedy was in back of his left ear and close enough to leave a powder burn mark.
Wow.
You can't do that from five feet in front.
You
can't get a powder burn.
Nowadays, we could figure that out, but back then, you can't really... Okay, so refresh the folks at home about Martin Luther King. Everyone knows he was killed and stuff, but what was the... And just a quick 31-minute... Okay. What happened?
He came to Memphis because 2 sanitation workers were killed.
Right.
We have since found out that they were deliberately killed to lure Dr. King here. They had
so it was
someone,
a setup to
oh,
get
absolutely,
him there. Okay.
Absolutely. They took care of everything. There was all the black firemen in the firehouse next door were transferred. They detained the police officer that was his bodyguard from being at the scene.
Right.
There was a false report put out that had cops going to the other end of the city.
Sure.
And somebody transferred his room to where he was in a balcony now. So it was a setup from the very beginning.
Yeah. Amazing.
And we're fairly convinced it was Hoover that was the initial J. Edgar Hoover.
Edgar Hoover.
The president.
The FBI.
Oh, the FBI. Oh, okay, right.
And he hated King with a passion.
Yeah.
Absolutely hated him.
But there is also a president named Hoover, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's why I got confused. Okay, because I know a lot about presidents, not a lot about FBI.
Keith went to public school.
Okay, so he's at the hotel, and then
he's met by a handler named Raul that the government has always denied existed.
Right.
Raul said, "Let's make some money selling rifles." So they sent him out to buy a rifle. They send him back saying it's not the right rifle. We're convinced they did it to make him more memorable to the store owner.
Sure.
Right.
So he brings the rifle back, gives it to the guy, and that's it. And they're making plans and doing stuff, and the guy says he's supposed to meet him by the boarding house.
Right.
And James O'Reilly has a flat tire on his Mustang and leaves to go to a gas station. While he's at the gas station, he hears on the radio about the assassination, puts two and two together, and says, "I better get out of here."
Right.
Keeping in mind, he's an escaped fugitive already.
Yeah, because he wasn't.
So the fact that he had nothing to do with King wouldn't matter. If he's grabbed, he's going to prison.
He was on the run.
Because he still did stuff.
Yeah.
Like, didn't he, like, steal a car or something? He did, like.
Well, he had a Mustang that he owned.
Yeah.
And they tried to claim that him and his brother robbed banks to get the money for it.
That's right.
And we know that's not true.
Right.
And they have since come up with evidence that Clyde Tolson, J. Edgar Hoover's number one guy, supposedly gave money to the warden to allow Ray to escape.
Wow.
So it went back even farther than we thought.
Amazing. Yeah. Okay, so James Earl Ray, he was still in Tennessee.
He was a criminal.
Yeah.
Definitely. He wasn't a murderer.
Yeah. So Martin Luther King gets shot, and they blame it on James Earl Ray.
And he takes off.
He takes off.
And he ended up, he circled through Georgia and then ended up in Canada to get fake ID. Now, you got to ask yourself, why would James Earl Ray go to Canada unless he was directed?
Right.
And the ID, the names that he used, we have since found out that all these people have connections to the military.
Wow.
And that they looked like him.
Sure.
So it's almost like these were handed to him.
Sure. It's almost like he's shepherding. He has handlers. It's almost like a production.
Yeah. And they always denied that Raul existed. This FBI agent, Donald Wilson.
It's kind of weird that his name is Raul. Because, like, if someone told me, "Hey, there's a guy named Raul," I'd deny that, too. Only because of his name. It
sounds a little...
So I'd be like, "I don't know, no Raul."
Well.
Anyways, I'm sorry.
Wasn't it? I lost my train of thought.
And,
right. So this FBI agent, Donald Wilson, goes through the Mustang, finds a couple of pieces of paper, and one of them says Raul, and it has a phone number.
Wow.
So there's no doubt that the guy existed.
Sure.
The second piece of paper had a phone number to what turned out to be one of Jack Ruby's nightclubs.
Oh, my.
And Jack Ruby, for the folks at home, is the guy who killed Lee Harvey Oswald.
Right. And you go, well, why would the two be connected?
Right.
Well, all three assassinations, Robert Kennedy, JFK.
Happened within 5 years.
A couple of years in the 60s. So anybody in the CIA, FBI, that's in this type of group, chances are it's the same group of people.
Sure.
Wow. That's very interesting.
A little scary, too.
Yeah, but it's... I'm not saying it's not scary. I'm saying it's interesting because the Jack Ruby thing, you know, like, I knew he killed Oswald. I think a lot of history buffs would know that, too. But, like, regular people would be like, who the hell is Jack Ruby? You know what I mean? So, okay, so...
There was a guy... I'm sorry to cut you
off.
There was an assassination researcher who was considered the number one guy named Harold Weinstein.
Right.
Weisberg. He literally is being interviewed on live radio, and he says... I don't know the exact wording, but he basically said, the information I have is that Robert Kennedy could be next less than 24 hours later. Robert Kennedy was killed.
Wow.
And he said, I was never so sad to have a prediction. It's less than 20. And he did it on live radio.
Yeah.
So there's no fudging of the dates.
That's got to sting a little, too. I'd be like, holy crap. I got to watch what I say on live radio for now. You know what I mean?
You never know.
Yeah. Okay, so you became good friends with James Earl Ray. You helped him get food and medicine and stuff. Did he ever tell you, like, that he had any knowledge of who did it, or
literally the only thing he knew was that Raul asked me to do A, B, and C.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they had little bits of information they found out.
You know, on that A, B, and C, Michael, Raul, just for the audience, do A, B, C.
Well, he was the handler.
The handler.
That was, you know, he goes up to James O'Reilly and says, I want you to buy this rifle.
Buy this rifle.
Then I want you to be at this place at this time.
Okay.
And pretty much just took him everywhere he needed to be.
Okay.
Well, had him rent the room at the boarding house.
Right.
And Raul, he approached James Earl Ray.
At a bar.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Okay, very good.
At a bar, yeah. That's usually where people named Raul hang out.
Well, that would be a good place for him to go to, Raul.
Well, we got to be careful because we don't even know if Raul is alive right now, so he might be listening.
Actually, he is.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they claim he's back in Portugal and that he has an unusual amount of government protection for a guy who's a nobody.
Really?
Right. Wow.
So that's amazing.
Alan just started to choke on his tongue.
No, it was a candy. But the timing on that was weird. The guy's alive. You know,
some people
in Portugal with government protection.
The Memphis officer, and this is what I'm reading from the other book, The Plot to Kill King.
Yeah,
the Memphis police officer that shot King is supposedly still alive.
Wow!
And the lawyer interviews him in the book. Wow. And there's a part where they found footprints in the field in between the boarding house where other people said they saw the shooters come from.
I remember a little footnote on that, the footprints. Yeah.
And they were size 13. And when he interviews this cop, who they believe is the shooter, he says, what size shoe do you wear? And the guy goes, size 13.
Oh, my.
Wow.
And he was the best marksman on the Memphis police force.
Yeah.
Size 13 is not one you find over at, Ross Dress for Less. 13 is like, you know, that's...
Yeah, 13's pretty big.
That's on the for sale rack.
I'm 6'6", no, but I only wear size 12.
Yeah. Michael is a very tall fellow.
Yeah, well, yeah. You are
very
a tall dude.
Yeah, very tall fellow.
Like, have you always been that tall?
I was born in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, because my father was working at the Atomic Energy Commission.
Oh, my.
Right.
So who knows if it was radiation or not.
Okay, so... So then I read in your book that Oliver Stone had interest in doing a movie about this.
We were about to ask you.
Oliver Stone was in pre-production. He had writers, he had scenery, he had actors. Yep. And then the story I heard was he gets arrested for drunk driving, and allegedly they found drugs in the car. Somebody says to him, now is not the time to do this movie on Dr. King, and the charges kind of all go away. But, I mean, he was in pre-production and ready to go.
Yeah, so that obviously had to scare him a little. Because
a lot.
Yeah, well, yeah, because Oliver Stone, he's a guy who's very, he's very...
Oliver Stone was a military guy. He was, I thought he, correct me, Michael, he was in Vietnam.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what was the movie with Charlie Sheen?
Platoon.
Platoon.
Platoon. Yeah. So... Oliver Stone can, like, do you think he should now do this movie?
I wish he would.
Yeah.
I really do. At one point, James Earl Ray sent me, before he decided to do the movie, there's a painting he did in there of a battle scene in the Vietnam War.
Right.
And he had it made into these lithographs that he signed. Mm-hmm. And he asked me, he said, would you get on a plane and go to California and give one to Oliver Stone and a note and try and get him interested? Wow. So I flew out here.
So wait, you met Oliver
Stone? I didn't meet Oliver Stone, but I met the president at the time. Her name was Janice Yang. She was the head of his production company. And I met with her and kind of told him the story. And then I guess he got in touch with Jimmy, James Earl Ray.
Yeah.
And kind of went from there.
Wow. Yeah, I think they should do it and have you write the screen, like rewrite it based on this book.
I'd love to. I know with the lawyers, that there have been several books out, and it's the compilation of all of them. There's really nothing we don't know about this case anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Michael's book is a compilation of the correspondence, you know, with these excerpts that get you thinking, you know, because it's coming, obviously, out of the mouth of James Earl Ray, and it has a very... eerie and very, it pulls you right in.
I tried to only use quotes that I actually knew it was an exact quote. Because usually they make up stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they go, we know this meeting took place between these two characters in this film.
Sure.
But we don't know exactly how they said it or what they said.
Right.
Every time I quoted him, that was exactly what he said.
Yeah.
Now, I just have one more question that has nothing to do with anything, but... I'm only asking this because this guy is actually one of my good friends, and he's one of my comedy mentors. Tom Arnold is in this book. So
you know what? I missed. Go ahead with that. I want to hear this.
The craziest part was I'm in Memphis.
I want to hear this Tom Arnold story.
Well, he was at House of Blues.
Was he doing stand-up?
It was a charity event. And
right.
If you brought a can of food, you got in for free.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, that's a great chance to meet Tom Arnold.
Right.
So I grab it, I walk in, and I'm wandering around, and he's maybe 10 feet in front of me, and he goes, holy cow, he goes, you're the guy from Geraldo. And this is the nuttiest thing. He knows who I am.
Right.
I mean, I'm nobody. You know, I got on the Geraldo show and pretended to teach yoga to cats.
That's great.
He evidently saw it.
Yeah.
And just thought it was hysterically
That's
funny.
That's amazing.
Wow.
So he kind of signed his picture for me. And
That's great. Yeah, Tom's awesome
guy. Oh, a great guy.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Okay, so this cat yoga thing, like what gave you the inspiration to do that?
Funny.
I had a cat that was double jointed.
Right.
And the cat could contort herself into odd positions.
That's funny.
So I'd show the picture. It was a way of meeting women. I'd walk up and say,
wait, you can meet women saying you do cat yoga?
I'd show the picture. And I'd say, you ever see a cat do this? And they kind of, oh, it's so cute. And we'd start talking.
Sure.
And this one woman, she said, what's the cat doing? Cat yoga. She goes, what? I said, yeah, there are temples in Tibet where they teach the ancient art of cat yoga.
Yeah.
So I went and I had somebody make what, I think there's a picture in there. They sewed a turban for my cat.
Right.
They made a floor-length cape for me.
Yeah.
And I posed for the pictures, sent it to the tabloids, and they did a full-page story.
That's great.
And that kind of...
And the story actually got you into the O.J. Simpson trial in a way, kind of.
That was...
And that's the Dominic Dunn we were talking
about. Yeah, Dominic Dunn.
I didn't mean to fast forward.
No, he wrote...
I forgot about Dominic Dunn.
Once they picked up on the story, Dominic Dunn was covering the trial for Vanity Fair
once
a month.
Yeah.
So he wrote about my engagement to Rosa Lopez. She was known as the maid from El Salvador.
Sure.
Right.
Then at some point the following month, I tell him that...
But you weren't actually engaged to her, right?
I flew to El Salvador to meet her.
Yes.
Yeah.
O.J. signed these cards while he was in the L.A. County Jail.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this is probably the strangest collectible ever. And there was a spot for the owner's signature. And
right.
I thought, if I could get another trial member to sign this...
It'd be worth gold.
It would be worth gold.
Right.
So I got in touch with Rosa Lopez, and she made the mistake of saying, if you're ever in El Salvador, you must come over. So I booked a plane as soon as I hung up the phone. 2 weeks later, I'm in El Salvador. And the media was hounding her to death.
Right.
So I said, you know, I'm going to tell them we're engaged. And if they leave you alone, we'll give them an exclusive to the wedding. OJ will give away the bride. Then once they find out they've been hoaxed, they'll never write a single thing about you because they'll think they're being hoaxed again.
Right.
And that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah, that's pretty smart.
That's an amazing
story.
That's funny.
She probably loved it at the beginning, but now she probably wishes she didn't do that because...
Right.
Like Cato, for example, he gets a lot of attention and stuff.
Remember we met Cato at the Comedy Store?
Oh, yeah. We love Cato.
I met Cato when he came to Baltimore doing his personal appearances. So I put on the cat yoga cape and the turban.
Whoa, you did that?
And they promptly threw me out. but they mentioned me in the newspaper article
Yeah, wow.
God, I love that cat yoga.
So
many women out here with the mat and... And the whole thing, it's like a cult-like thing. So when he says cat yoga in Tibet, that's hilarious.
I had to tell people that I charged $500 an hour to stop people from harassing me. You got to give little fluffy private lessons. I'll pay anything.
How much will you charge Alan to do cat yoga?
I'm worried. My joints are stiff. I don't involve myself in yoga. Thank you, though.
Okay, so this prank called cat yoga got you... A lot of press and stuff, so it really helped you in a way, Right? Because people knew who you were.
Like I said, Tom Arnold walks up and says, I know you're the cat yoga guy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool, man.
Well, that picture of Michael as a ventriloquist in, was it the not the Inquirer, but the, what are the...
The Globe.
The Globe. Wow. I was, too bad we can't, we don't have video.
Yeah, yeah. That would have been cool, man.
I took the puppet on the Geraldo show, but he didn't let me bring her out, but they did show photographs of her. And
so while you were doing this cat yoga thing, you were also doing acting. So did you do the cat yoga while you were in acting? Or
no, it was just more of, you know, you'd be talking to casting directors. What are you doing lately? And, well, I've got this thing going on.
It's a
and
great conversation starter.
Oh, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Because they don't know the fact that there are real cat masseuses. Yeah. You can have a cat get acupuncture.
Yeah.
I mean, all these things exist.
Sure.
Right.
Cat psychics. So I thought, well, why not the ancient art of cat yoga?
Yeah.
That's great.
Now, did James Earl Ray, like, was he, like, very supportive of this cat yoga thing? Or?
He probably did a dozen paintings.
Wow.
In his prison cell.
Really?
He did a painting of Dominic Dunn and Geraldo pushing the plunger on what's supposed to be 5,000 sticks of dynamite. And you see me and the cats being blown up in the air. And it was because, this is what they were thinking.
Sure.
Because they hated me once the hoax came out.
Yeah, yeah.
You get where cats in prison doing cat yoga. He did one of the Easter Bunny being stalked by the cat yoga cat.
God, that's funny.
So, okay,
James
so,
Earl Ray has some creative energy that he likes to hit the canvas.
Yeah, so obviously James Earl Ray liked the paint or something, right?
Well, I think that a lot of inmates, if you get any notoriety, it's a way of making money.
Oh,
they make money off it?
Yeah. Not a lot, but a lot of these guys put stuff up for sale. And,
sure.
Wow.
You know, they make little arts and crafts and stuff.
Yeah,
Euthanasia, I mean, Kevorkian? Was it Kevorkian? You know, he was a big, he wanted the mandate to...
Dr. Kevorkian.
I actually saw him. I went to a gallery. They're scary. Yeah, have you ever seen Kevorkian stuff?
Have you seen the stuff by John Wayne Gacy?
No.
Is that, the clown?
Yeah, the clown. Oh, God, the clown. Yeah, no, it's funny. Yeah.
Now, see, I always separated James Earl Ray's paintings because he didn't do it.
Yeah,
right.
I thought
sure.
So
that's good.
Forgive me if I keep on going on the subject, but
no,
I'm just like so fascinating.
Ask me anything.
But so you became like, for example, Alan Lee is my best friend, and I love Alan Lee with all my heart. I would do anything for him.
I appreciate that.
But if he was convicted, convicted of, you know, murdering somebody or something,
this
I would not visit him every day.
This is Hollywood.
But suppose you were convinced he was innocent.
That's true. Okay,
I would appreciate.
Let me get back to that. If I was convinced, if I convinced Alan Lee was innocent, I'd still visit him like once every now and then. But you saw him every single day.
That's right.
Like. I just, like, wow, that's
right,
just so fascinating.
The more stuff I saw them doing to him, it just only reinforced.
Sure.
Oh, so that's how it started. So, like, you went to go visit him to meet him, and then you saw, like, what they're doing to him, and then you're like, all right, this isn't right.
Yeah, I can't leave. I'm going to stick, and I'm going to ride this out the whole way through.
Steps,
and,
yeah. He took some steps with
him. Okay, because that's different. Because, like, if I went to go visit Alan Lee and he had a black eye, I'd be like, oh, Alan, were you hanging out with Bubba or something?
Thank you. But, comedy. It's always comedy.
No, but I get that, you know, because, so I get that.
I was lucky enough to do something few people have ever done. Usually, and you've seen this in the movies, when you visit an inmate, they bring them to the visiting room.
Yes.
And there's guards watching.
Glass.
And that's when they're in a big room and everyone can walk around.
Right.
And there's also the kind where the glass is in front of you. They got to the point where they would literally escort me through the prison and lock me inside his solitary prison cell.
Wow.
And then come back for me an hour later. So I'm in the cell that he spends 24 hours a day in with all his belongings, his case files, and we can talk about anything we want, and no one's listening.
That's fantastic.
Now, were you at all, before you got to know him, were you at all a little terrified?
It's a little scary being in the prison at times.
Uh-huh.
But I actually got to the point where they used to yell at me because I would wander off And they go, this isn't a frat house.
Right.
You know, those guys want to kill you. Yeah, trust me.
Yeah.
And I go, no, they don't. They like me because I'm friends with James Earl Ray.
Right.
They would never touch me.
Tennessee. The prison was in Tennessee.
Memphis.
Memphis.
Yeah.
There you go.
He was in a few of them. Memphis, Nashville.
Nashville.
The last one was Nashville.
That's amazing.
He was in it's called a special needs facility. It's pretty much a hospital for inmates that are dying.
Right.
But it's also a
highly secure, federal prison.
So you were telling me in the elevator that Playboy went to go interview him.
That is so funny.
And
he did the monthly interview that you see everybody else do.
Right, right. And they asked him, oh, are you going to escape? And he said no. And then the next day he escaped.
Wow. Is that amazing?
Like,
you have her.
So,
and if you buy that issue, you go on eBay and buy copies of that Playboy issue, and it's all in the interview. How
right.
The warden tells him, he shows up to interview him the next day, and the warden says he's not here. He escaped.
See,
they had to wait until they recaptured him, and then they continued the interview like it was nothing.
See, the first question I would be like is like, so remember the other day when you said you wouldn't escape? What changed your mind? And then, like, and I expect an answer like, oh, the guy, Bubba, started hitting on me or something.
Well, it even got weirder because they could never figure out how he physically escaped.
Really?
And one day they noticed one of the paintings on his cell wall shows an inmate climbing over the prison wall using a homemade ladder. And when they look closely, the inmate's number is 65477.
Which is
James
Earl Ray.
Wow.
And I've got the, he used to write coded letters to his, the prison would read every letter, stamp it inspected. They listened to every phone call. So he devised a code.
Right.
His brother would help him escape and plant items in the woods for him to dig up.
Well,
he seems to be a highly intelligent fellow.
Very bright guy.
He
became a jailhouse lawyer.
Oh.
You know, he was so well.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
So James Earl Ray became a jailhouse lawyer?
You know, unofficially.
Oh, right,
He would help other inmates. James Earl Ray was my lawyer. I filed.
He was your lawyer.
I was one of these articles that was by the tabloids.
Right, right.
The deal we made was they were supposed to give me a certain amount of copies.
Sure.
I didn't want to take money because I thought I could get arrested for fraud.
Do you regret taking that decision?
Well, I said I'll take the copy of the issue so I can pass them out.
Sure. Right. But do you regret not taking money?
No, I didn't take the money.
No, no.
I was afraid to.
No, but do you if you go back in time, do you wish you could take the money?
I
know
I'm
answer.
Still,
so,
I guess, yeah, I'd love the money.
Okay.
I don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah. Okay, I get it.
So they try to screw me out of the copies.
Sure.
So I go to James Earl Ray and say, let's file a lawsuit. So he literally drafts the paperwork for
right.
me. I file a $20 million lawsuit against the Globe and the reporter that did the story. They get a big shot lawyer to try and have the case thrown out.
Right.
And James Earl Ray files another set of paperwork, and they ended up settling with me.
That's amazing.
So what'd they do? Give you 20 million copies?
No, it was supposed to be 1,000 copies.
Okay.
And I'm legally not allowed to say the settlement I got.
Oh, right, right.
But it's kind of common sense that it's usually around what the damages are.
Well, they must have been happy to have such a publicity thing, what you mentioned.
Did they know James Earl Ray was your lawyer?
It's on the paperwork.
Holy Lord.
They must have been happy about that. You know,
I'm surprised they never did a story just on that.
That's what I mean. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Now, you want to hear a really strange coincidence? 15 years go by. And the guy I sued that worked at the town, I go over to Santa Monica to buy a refrigerator from an appliance store.
Right.
And the salesperson is helping me, and I go to sign the paperwork, and I see him look at my name, and he looks at me, and he pulls his jacket back, and he's got a name tag, and it says his name, and I go, that's the reporter. Well, and so I asked him, and he says, years later, I got fired by the tabloids.
Yeah.
And this is how he ended up
wow.
selling appliances. But what are the odds that a guy I sue for an article on the East Coast.
Ends up.
15 years later, he's selling appliances in Santa Monica, and I walk in to buy a refrigerator from him.
Yeah.
That's what makes it.
I hope he gave you a great deal on that refrigerator.
Only in Los Angeles.
Did he give you, he'd be like, oh, by the way, this one comes with a freezer. But no, I'm looking at the book, and, like, honestly, like, I mean, I like the ladies and all, but James Earl Ray, he seems like he was a good-looking dude when he was younger. So, like, do you think maybe that has something to do with the...
Kind of an Elvis.
Yeah.
Tennessee.
Yeah, but,
in Texas.
But do you think his looks had something to do with, like, his frame? That.
I think it was more of he had been in the Army.
Right.
And they love to go after military people.
I'm glad, because that was my question, and you're already answering it before I even mentioned it. You know how they sort... we were talking about, you know, the military and so forth, that they find, just like casting... Yep. And I guess we were talking about how he looked. But you, go ahead with that.
And some of them, they do testing. Remember that thing
please,
with that COINTELPRO?
Go on with that.
The LSD, they give it to people.
Go on with that.
And that's where they seem to mine a certain group of people that they can use.
That's right.
It says here that Dexter, who is Martin Luther King Jr.'s son, said, "My family and I believe that you did not commit this crime."
They helped pay for some of his medical bills. They paid for stuff behind the scenes. They really made an effort to try and help
that's
him.
That's Dexter
so like
King.
If
they were convinced he was not the guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Because in the quote that, you know, he answers Dexter, he says, you know, I didn't do it.
Right.
No, I didn't. And Dexter responds, you know, I believe you and we'll do everything we can.
So that's got to be like something positive on, I mean, I know James Earl Ray is dead, but to clear his name, that's got to be like something more positive that the Kings don't believe he did this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's kind of positive.
And she won a civil suit that she filed years ago against one of the conspirators.
Wow.
So literally a jury, a formal jury in a courtroom heard the evidence, said not guilty.
Wow. Wait, so he's actually been proven not guilty?
Well, in the civil trial.
Oh, in a civil trial.
They kind of did the same thing in the O.J. case.
Yeah, right.
OJ,
you know,
the O.J. deal.
Right.
They filed a civil suit, and the King family did it against one of the conspirators.
Right.
And he kind of rolled over and started talking.
Well, dude, I'll tell you one thing, Michael. As soon as this interview is over, I'm going to get on Twitter and tweet Oliver Stone and be like, make this movie.
Great idea.
Yeah, and I'm going to be like, hire Michael Gabriel to screenplay it.
Because
he has a book.
The dialogue.
Yeah, you have the dialogue for the book right here.
That is like, whoa.
It's in my hand. How long did it take you to write this?
Oh, a couple of years.
The
problem was I must have had 30 or 40 journals because I took notes, everything. I mean, I saw them every day.
Sure.
Right.
You can imagine. You know, they say a script is usually a minute a page.
A minute a page,
so I'm there for an hour. You can imagine.
Yeah.
And 150 visits.
Sure.
So this is an extract of those meetings that were an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the reason why I asked is because, like, I am writing a book, and I've been writing it for about 2 years, and I'm only on the second chapter, you know? So, like, I don't know if I either take writing the book seriously or if I just don't know what to say. And the fact that you writ a book that, I mean, you spent a lot of time with this dude, you know what I mean? So, like,
years.
You, like, obviously still and did really care about him. Yeah, like, I think that's just amazing.
I stayed friends with his brother, Jerry, right up to the very end.
Really?
And this is just the most frustrating part. The lawyer comes out with this book about a month and a half ago, 2 months, called The Plot to Kill King. And I'm reading all this stuff, and my first thought is I got to call Jerry Ray and say, would you guess what the latest is? And he just died.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, say, he would have loved this.
Yeah.
He was the type of guy that would go on TV shows and just scream at the government.
Right.
Do you remember Morton Downey?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
He went on the Morton Downey show, and they gave him a lie detector test. and they asked him, had he ever been arrested? And he said, nope, I've never been arrested. The polygraph examiner says he's telling the truth. I'm one of the best in the country. And Jerry Ray looks at him and says, well, I wish they had told that to the warden when they locked me up in prison.
Wow.
You know, because he was obviously lying.
Sure.
And fooled the polygraph examiner.
Which, now, and that tells you something about these tests and how they manipulate everything.
Now, where can the folks at home like purchase this book at a Barnes and Noble?
Is that on Amazon?
No, I'm selling it online.
Online.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
So, what's the website for the folks at home?
Catyoga.com.
Oh. Catyoga.com.
That's easy to remember.
Holy Lord.
Catyoga.com.
And
Michael Gabriel.
And so catyoga.com. Do you also like give it like just for a joke? Be like, oh, I'll teach your cat how to do yoga.
Yeah, just as
like I think you should really look into that, you know, because like you know,
I a few times I did it on live television.
Really,
I had reporters come over. I fixed my apartment up to look like a cat yoga school.
Yeah, yeah.
And they come over, and my excuse for that. Why the cats could never do it was that the cameras are too and the lights are too distracting.
Right.
The cats need to meditate.
They do.
Yeah.
They do indeed.
Wow. Well, I'm going to start something called a dog yoga thing and, like, really give you a run for your money here. Anyways.
I know. It's hard to say this and keep a straight face.
Yeah, I know.
Imagine when I had to do this on live television.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm pretending. I'm dead serious. This is... I told him I spent 8 years in Tibet.
Yeah.
And not one of them said, show me a passport with Tibet. Just show us you've been to Tibet.
But no, like, see, the thing with internet hoax is why one thing, like, I really admire you for doing this, and because you did it multiple times, but, like, it just seems like, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe, like, the joke would be get old a little, but then you kept doing it.
I kept upping the game.
That's what I'm saying.
I found a porno star to come forward and say she was the other woman. Once Rosa left me officially, she came forward and said she's the other woman.
Wow.
And Dominic Dunn mentioned it in Vanity Fair.
Dominic Dunn.
Yeah, Dominic Dunn.
Early, yeah. Well, you know what's funny? In a way, Michael has shown that you can manipulate the media, and he did it, you know, and then, you know, he sort of proved how the media can be manipulated by doing it.
That's an interesting point, Alan Lee. How does it feel to manipulate the media? Because I've never done it.
I was actually shocked at how easy it was. But to be honest, I think most of that was because it was O.J.
Right.
You could say anything, and if it had O.J. in
good
it,
environment.
They put it on the news as quick as they could.
Right.
I've tried to do it since, and I don't know it's because they recognize my name. But
yeah.
I tried to tell them at one point that Elvis came into the candy store I had when he had supposedly been long dead.
Sure.
And I said he gave me a ring. And I made up the story, and I contacted the Inquirer. They said, no, we're not interested. A week later, they run a story where a priest runs into Elvis, and Elvis gives the priest a ring.
Wow.
So they lifted my story and cut me out of it.
There you go.
So that... Which is weird because you actually look like a priest in a way.
He could pass for.
Yeah, you could. I'd cast you as a priest. All right,
I'd put him in a wired earth western. I'm a western freak.
Well, we're running out of time, but Michael, tell us something where the folks at home can purchase your book and go see you do stand up comedy at. Like,
go ahead and plug it.
Well, they can get the book at catyoga.com. I'm going to be at Flappers on October 16th.
Great.
Which one, Burbank or
Burbank?
Okay.
And then just around local clubs.
Local clubs?
Yeah.
Now, do you have a Twitter or a Facebook that the folks at home can, like, follow you?
Comedian Michael Gabriel.
Oh, it's not Cat Yoga?
I have a Mr. Cat Yoga and Comedian Mike Gabriel also.
Oh, nice.
Facebook and Twitter.
All right.
We'll be friending you tonight.
Oh,
please.
Yeah. Me and Michael, we've been friends for, and he just said...
And speaking of which, I'd like to thank you. You don't have any idea how helpful you are to comedians who are up and coming. Well, you know, where do we get information from?
Oh, my God.
It's really nice to have somebody to be as generous and outgoing. And the fact that you invited me here, I'm just bowled over.
We're
by
glad
this.
To have you.
Oh,
thank you,
that means a lot to me, pal.
Thank you. That's
so thank you both very much.
Oh, thank you. And I did not pay you to say that.
No.
It's nice when...
Not on this budget.
It's nice when people say good things about you when the world is so dark.
Oh, I love your Facebook posts. You don't see many comedians that are as honest about what goes on and how other comedians should treat each other. And
yeah.
It's nice.
Oh,
very nice.
I really appreciate that, man. Okay, so I have this book called James Earl Ray, The Last Days of Inmate 65477, It's a true story written by Michael Gabriel, and you can pick up your copy at catyoga.com. If the folks at home purchase it, do you sign it for them?
Oh, I sign every copy.
You sign every copy? Beautiful. Excellent. So he'll assign you a copy.
eBay is selling a couple of signed copies for $49, I should let you know.
$49?
Yeah, I'll bring another copy.
Thank
you. Holy Lord.
There you go.
Alan just scored a free book. $49, that's pretty good.
It's worth everything.
Yeah, but I don't get it.
You don't get it?
No, they took one of my used copies, I guess, and they're reselling it.
Oh, my God.
Is that even legal?
Yeah. No, if they purchased it, yeah, okay. They could sell anything they want. Yeah. But, man, $49. Like, how much do you sell your book for?
Like $15?
$15. Wow.
They made a little change on that.
Yeah. I think you should up it to $50 and then say don't buy it on eBay.
Sounds good.
There you go. See.
All right.
You have a good business sense. That
well,
sense.
You know, I'm smart. All right.
We could go on.
We can go on, but the director's like lighting me.
Yeah,
but
we only
have 45 minutes in the studio.
That was quick.
Yeah.
Well, I knew it would be
quick.
But
boy, we were talking out there, and it's great.
But you know what's weird is like I interview a lot of people, and like a lot, you know, 90% of people who do the show are my friends, personal friends and stuff. But I never say this, but I would like to have you back. Because I think you're an interesting dude.
I second immediately.
If you bring me back, I'll tell you about the time I was a Black Panther in Forrest Gump. Jewish Michael Gabriel played a Black Panther in Forrest Gump.
Oh my God! You should have talked about that.
I thought
you were one of the hippies in Forrest Gump.
I was a Black Panther.
The Black Panther. Who was that?
The director said that there were white guys that were radical and against the war, so he had a whole group of Black Panthers, and he wanted one white guy. And I had the
Oh right. Yeah, yeah.
I looked the part.
Yeah.
For being white.
Yeah. That's so
other
acting.
Than that.
Oh, wow. And then
that got me my SAG card.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Wow.
Great.
I totally misread your bio then. I thought you said you were one of the hippies at the Forrest Gump.
It was Black Panther. I was a little confused on it.
Yeah. Because then I was watching it and I was like, I don't remember seeing. But yeah.
There's a picture of me in the book hugging a wolf that was on the set.
Yeah.
That was kind of scary.
Hugging a wolf?
There was a Vietnam veteran. They have one of these MIA tents set up for missing in action.
Sure.
Right.
And this one veteran had a wolf that he would bring with him.
Was it a real wolf?
It was a real wolf.
Holy Lord. My. I would be scared to shit.
And he had the thing lightly, like, put it, not bite me on the arms. It's just squeezed to show me.
Yeah. We got the light, but we got to go. But Alan Lee, do you have anything to promote?
Not right off the bat. I mean, I'm glad that the show is going so well, and we have such great guests, our guests tonight included, Michael Gabriel.
All right.
And we're having a lot of fun here.
Well, we'll be back next week, and everyone follow Michael on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for doing it, pal.
Thank you very much.
All right, guys. See you next week.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee right here on LA Talk Radio.